Okay, we will resume the meeting. Councillor Thompson, would you please say the prayer?
Grant us, O God, perception and patience, that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from parochialism that divides, and so create us the desire for progress and responsible action, that all our words and deeds be thy accord, thy will of thy glory, of thy holy name. Amen.
Please stay standing for O Canada.
Councillor McClure, you're on my board. Did you want to speak?
No.
No? Okay. I'll clear you off. Okay. I thought maybe you were just raring to go today. Okay. Okay. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Okay. Seeing none. Closed meeting we did. Okay. We shall go right to our delegations. We have our finance award, Mr. Kaufman. And I think what we're going to do, because there's photo ops for some of these, I think we'll have all of the different presentations, and then we'll go out for the photo ops, okay?
Thank you, Mayor Morrison. It gives me great pleasure to be in front of you again today with respect to a Government Finance Officers Association Award. I'm just going to give you a little background, because this is a different award than the one that I have presented to members of staff in the past. Actually, the GFOA runs three award programs. One is for the financial statements, the audited financial statements. One is for a Distinguished Budget Award. And the third award is called the Popular Annual Financial Reporting Award Program. Now, in front of you, you should have a colored document that looks like this. And this is actually the document that we presented to the GFOA. So, what this is, it's a high-quality popular annual financial report that specifically is designed to be readily accessible and easily understandable to the general public and other interested parties without a background in public finance. And then, if you win the award, it recognizes governments that are successful in achieving that goal. In order to produce a document like this, this took more than just finance staff. You'll notice that there are a number of pictures in there, a very nice layout of the program. We gave highlights, achievements. So this was a concerted effort of both corporate services and corporate communications. So today I'm going to give this award to both of those staff members in both of those departments. So if Canadian governments want to participate in this program, first off, you have to have won the award for the financial audited financial statements. If you win that, you can make this document and present that for a program. And it's very important because we're trying to make financial information accessible to ordinary citizens and other interested parties who may not be familiar in looking at those detailed traditional financial reports. So this tries to put it into simple language, layman's terms, gives graphs, charts, and pictures and words that are easily understandable. As far as the judging process, there are four judges who will do the evaluation, and they're looking at things like reader appeal, understandability, distribution methods, and this report is available very easily to any citizen that wants it on our website at the town of Caledon, www.caledon.ca. We also look at creativity, notable achievements, and the rest is then based on overall quality and usefulness of the report. The judges then score it, and you have to have an average score of 75% to get the award. And I'm very happy to say that we had an average score for this report, and it's the first time that we've submitted it to the GFOA. Our average score was almost 87%. So we're very proud of that fact. Anyway, what I'd like to do right now is they also send us the award by way of the plaque. So this will be the third plaque that we'll be able to proudly display in the cabinet. And I'd like to present it to Peggy Tollett and Ryan Boyington from Corporate Communications for their hard work and dedication in doing this report.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. I think the next one, you're also involved in, Mr. Kaufman, right?
The next presentation?
The next presentation? No?
I don't think so.
Oh, Sherry is. Okay. Okay, so I don't know. Maybe, well, I guess the press would like to hear the next one, too. So okay. After we'll have you go out.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Moss.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go on to our next delegation. I just want to say, Mr. Kaufman, that you know, we know you're leaving, but I want to say that you know, we in the past had not ever received any awards, and I want to thank you very much for helping to bring us up to a standard where we actually can compete with other municipalities and win these awards, because I think it's really important.
Well, thank you, Mayor Morrison. And I should point out one thing that maybe I erred in doing, and it's going to be in the media release. There are these three awards, and we are the only municipality in recent history that has successfully achieved all three awards in one fiscal period.
Oh.
So the Region Appeal gets a lot of these awards, so do Brampton, Mississauga. Some of the other cities like Milton have been in there a long time. But we are the only one in recent history that have successfully won all three awards in 1 year. So that's a big accomplishment for us as well.
So thank you very much. Okay. Sherry, Ms. Brake? Well, this is exciting news also.
Is it on now? Mm-hmm. Better. Okay. So with the Caledon OPP, we had, our target was to achieve LEED Silver. So we found out that we have, in fact, exceeded that and achieved LEED Gold. We were successful with every point that we went forward with. Ultimately, what that resulted in is a very efficient building. We have a white roof. We have a cistern, geothermal. All of these items which work together to provide us with a really nice building. What we have provided also, so there's a LEED plaque that was given to us for the achievement. So we've also went ahead and got one for the town hall. So that will sit here, as well as the plaque that goes with it.
Okay. I'm just thinking, for those who don't know what LEED Gold would be and how difficult it is to achieve it.
Ultimately.
And that it's for the new OPP building that was built?
Yes, for the new OPP building that was built in Innes Lake Road. Ultimately, from construction right through to operation, We had to document and ensure that we were using local products. Every product that was used there had to go through review process, whether it was a specific glue right down to the furniture. So everything was documented, everything was reviewed, and if it didn't pass, it was a fail, we had to go back to the drawing board and find a product that was properly used and would be functional for their use as well.
And so congratulations, because I know that you led the project and you did an outstanding job and to get us to gold. This is our first gold building.
Yes.
Yes. So we're really very, very happy, because being an environmental community and taking it seriously, this is just such a wonderful thing. And the other thing about Leeds, mm-hmm. And you could maybe elaborate, I'm not sure, but is that when you achieve these things, it you get payback beyond.
That's right.
So you don't use as much electricity, you don't use as much water, you don't use as much gas and all of those other things, because it's an environmentally built building, so that it's
reducing the footprint on the environment.
Yes, reduces the footprint.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Did a wonderful job. Okay. And so we'll go out after. Okay. And then we're not going back and forth. Okay. Thank you. Okay. We'll go on to our Senior of the Year award presentation. On behalf of Council, I am very pleased to present the Senior of the Year Award to a very special individual who does not only an outstanding job in looking after the needs of older adults in our community, but also is an exceptional role model. Carol Kidd, our extraordinary Senior of the Year, has great concern for not only the seniors in our community, but also many of those who are most vulnerable. As I started working on my presentation notes for today, I read through the letter that was submitted to Council regarding Carol, and I wanted to share it with everyone. Carol Kidd's passion for being an advocate for seniors has been of enormous benefit to our community. Her concern for seniors and other vulnerable persons regarding their health, well-being, and safety has been an inspiration to many. From her first volunteer position, when she spent many years and countless hours transcribing textbooks into Braille for the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, to the present time where she enjoys a well-earned retirement, Carol has not stopped her efforts to improve the lives of others. Shortly after moving to Caledon, Carol volunteered at the Davis Long-Term Care Home and served on several committees. She enjoyed helping to take residents on outings, assisting the hairdresser, and doing numerous other volunteer jobs to make the lives of the residents more comfortable. Carol also served as president of the Helping Hands Volunteers for 8 years. Her compassionate and caring nature was a great asset. Carol also became a volunteer for Caledon Meals on Wheels, and once again, this organization received the benefit of her ability to deal with any task given to her. Excuse me. From 1995 until her retirement in 2012, Carol was employed as executive director of Caledon Meals on Wheels. During that time, Carol worked diligently to improve the lives of seniors and those in need in our Caledon community. Initiating and building new programs with a strong volunteer force, she made sure that anyone who could be helped by the organization received their help. The programs grew to meet the needs of our senior residents. Many extra hours were spent as a volunteer on local committees relating to health and wellness, and she encouraged her staff to do the same. Carol was a founding member of the board of the Abbeyfield Home in Caledon. Her great knowledge and experience has helped bring to reality this wonderful facility. Abbeyfield Home is now a valuable alternative home for seniors. Carol was recognized by the Ontario Fire Marshal's Public Safety Council with an award to reward her efforts to educate volunteers to bring fire prevention and safety into the homes of seniors and their families in Caledon. After retiring, Carol continues to bring her enthusiasm, expertise, and experience, her compassion and dedication to the Seniors Advisory Committee. This committee works together with the Town of Caledon and provides recommendations and advice to Council on matters which impact older adults in our community. Currently, Carol sits on the Housing and Accommodation Working Group and the Health and Wellness Working Group of the Seniors Advisory Committee. She also participates in the Age-Friendly Working Group. It is with great pride and respect that we nominate Carol Kidd as a candidate for Ontario Senior of the Year 2014. And that was from the Caledon Seniors Advisory Committee. On behalf of Council, thank you, Carol, for all your hard work and dedication to your community. I know that you are such a dedicated community person. We really appreciate everything that you've done and everything you contribute to. And I don't know of anyone in Caledon who doesn't know Carol. So on behalf of all the residents in the town of Caledon, Carol, we thank you very, very much. You've been an outstanding, outstanding citizen in this community. Thank you. So now we can go and do the photo ops. I have the plaque for you, Carol, so we'd be happy to present it out in the foyer. Ask Bob Kreese to come forward, please. Bob? Bob? Both, come. I think there was a song, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm not singing it.
Oh!
I might know the words, but yeah, she's a tough act to follow.
I am.
Very tough act to follow. Well done, Carol. Good morning, Mayor Morrison and members of council. As you know, my name is Bob Kreese. I'm the chair of the Seniors Advisory Committee for the town of Caledon. And I wanted to briefly address you today regarding some of the accomplishments of the committee during 2013. I would also like to highlight some of the initiatives we are working on throughout 2014. As noted in the report before you, we engaged many presenters during our four meetings in 2013. Those that stood out included a representative from the Canadian Urban Institute, who took a very broad outlook on age-friendly communities, not just the aspect of housing, et cetera, but also a focus on the quality of life. Also, we had a chap in from the Pan Am Games Committee who provided information not only on the games, but also the opportunities they'll provide. Our working groups, in their time away from the committee, also met with various stakeholders in the community, including those in the development community through the mayor's roundtable discussion advocating for universal design in new builds. I understand from members of the working group that staff in our planning department are now working on a requirement for builders to supply a model home for purchase as one that offers universal design. This is a really important step in the right direction and one the committee is quite proud of. I don't know of many municipalities that ask for this. We are obviously very pleased. We have also been made aware of other initiatives in the community, such as the Caledon Specialist Clinic. Being made aware of projects like this allow us to inform our fellow older adults in the community of what is available. I won't go through each item we have tackled as the report does that, but I would like to highlight some of the items we are going to continue to pursue in 2014. One item of significance is the Older Adult Strategic Plan. This plan began in late 2013, and I understand from staff that consultants are finalizing the draft plan, which will be presented to the public and then to council for final approval. This plan is significant because it will help us as we work towards assisting in the age-friendly communities designation through the World Health Organization. A select group of us have been working on this initiative and are currently looking into resources and our next steps. As you know, the committee is here to support you as well. If there are any issues or matters related to older adults in Caledon Please use us as needed to help advise. And we truly thank you for your support. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. RB1 is the report. But on behalf of council, I would really like to thank you and your committee for all the work that you do and for continuing to stay focused on what's important and what's going to be so important in the future for the residents of this municipality. Yeah. I think all of us have heard people say, oh, I've had to move out of Caledon, you know, there isn't a place. We need to push this harder than ever. So I thank you very much for everything that you've done.
Thank you.
We're going to move to RB1. And I have a motion moved by Councillor Mezzapelli, seconded by Councillor McClure, that report ADM 2014-019 regarding Seniors Advisory Committee annual report for 2013 be received. Are there any questions? All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. Councillor Foley has asked that we do the notice of motion now, her notice of motion, because it has to do with the seniors. And so with your acceptance, I will move that notice of motion forward. Okay. Moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli. Whereas the World Health Organization has developed the Age-Friendly Communities, AFC, project to engage communities worldwide in making their communities more age-friendly by identifying key elements needed to ensure that communities support healthy aging. And whereas the Town of Caledon Seniors Advisory Committee supports the spirit and principles of the World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Communities, therefore, be it resolved that staff in the administration department be directed to investigate the feasibility of pursuing an age-friendly designation for the Town of Caledon and report back to council concerning the opportunities, challenges, and resources that may be required. All those in favor? Oh, just a second. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to speak for just a moment. We often talk about how proud we are of our children. I think it goes without saying we're also proud of our grandparents and our parents. And I think that working towards an age-friendly community is one way that we can demonstrate how much we are proud of our older adult community. It is perhaps not even as much about the designation as it is about moving in the right direction, making sure when we build new communities and revitalize our existing ones, we're doing it in a way that is safe, active, healthy, all those good things for our seniors population as well as our other populations. When you make a space accessible for a senior or an older adult, it also becomes a space that's welcoming for a mother with a stroller. So I think it all ties together, and I hope that council will support the idea of an age-friendly community and that we'll be able to make sure that the resources needed to make it happen end up being put in place. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of the motion? Carried. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to our next delegation, Kathy Kurtz, Senior Policy Planner, with regards to the Provincial Policy Plan Review. That's RB2. And you also have Delegation Presentations, you have something on it. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Planning Act requires that the PPS be reviewed every 5 years. And the last PPS we had in place was the PPS 2005. And the province began reviewing that in 2010 and issued a draft PPS in September of 2012. The province began the five-year review, yes, in 2010. But we now have a new PPS 2014 coming into effect on April 30th, 2014. Caledon provided comments on the PPS through DP 2012-107 in November of 2012. The PPS 2014 has several new aspects, but one of the existing aspects that's been retained was that extraction shall minimize social, economic, and environmental impacts. What's new is that aggregate recycling facilities are now permitted as an accessory use within operations where this is feasible. We also have a new policy encouraging comprehensive rehabilitation. This is something that the town has been asking for ever since we were working on OPA 161 in the late 90s. The new PPS has a requirement to identify deposits of mineral aggregate resources. Now, the town did this through OPA 161, but while the policy refers to this is a requirement where provincial mapping is available, of course, as you may recall, the town did considerable refinements of the Ministry of Natural Resources aggregate resource mapping before we put mapping in our official plan. Another new aspect of the new PPS is the identification of strategic employment lands. The PPS 2014 has retained the 20-year horizon for designating lands, including employment lands, so we can only designate lands to 2031. However, there's a clarification in the new PPS stating that infrastructure and public service facilities can be planned beyond the 20-year planning horizon, and we see that occurring in, for example, the GTA West transportation corridor. What is really of interest to us that is new is that the PPS now allows municipalities to identify and protect employment lands beyond the 20-year planning horizon as long as they're not designated. So we can map strategic employment lands for the long term in the official plan as conceptual areas to be protected. And this is something that the town had asked for in its previous comments to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing on the draft PPS. New policies related to water, sanitary, and stormwater include a provision for on-site sewer and water services. This is private septic systems and private wells. The previous PPS limited servicing on private services to a maximum of 5 lots. That provision has been removed, and there are a series of conditions that must be met instead. And one of those is that site conditions must be suitable. And in settlement areas, private services can be used, but only for infilling and rounding out. And this is something the town had asked for in its comments, was more flexibility for using private services, and instead of the 5-lot maximum, having site conditions being suitable. So this is something that the province did respond to again. The PPS 2005 never dealt with stormwater management at all. So we have a new policy which sets out objectives for stormwater management. And what these objectives seek to do are minimize or prevent increases in contaminant loads, changes to water balance, erosion, risk to human health and safety, and property damage. So this is a progressive new policy. Previously in the provincial policy, we had prime agricultural areas and rural areas, and the rural areas were the non-prime agricultural lands. The new PPS has changed this, and this is could get confusing. It's now got rural area and rural lands definition. And the rural area means all areas outside the urban boundary. So that includes settlement areas, natural areas, prime agricultural areas, and non-prime agricultural areas, just anything that's outside the urban boundary. What we previously used to call rural area, the lower capability agricultural lands in the town are now defined as rural lands. So these are areas outside settlement areas and outside prime agricultural areas. The town has often commented to the province that we need more flexibility to foster economic development in rural areas and prime agricultural areas. And the new PPS addresses this issue by supporting diversification, including value-added products, tourism, and economic activities in prime agricultural areas. New uses permitted on rural lands include recreational dwellings, home occupations, home industries, and cemeteries. Now, those are in the lower capability agricultural lands, not the prime agricultural lands. On-farm diversified uses are permitted, and this term replaces the former secondary uses. And this includes value-added agricultural products, and the restriction that they be small in scale has been removed. It's more of a, there's a test of compatibility with surrounding land uses. And agricultural related uses, which included farm machinery dealerships and feed drying operations and other uses that supported the agricultural community, the stipulation that they be small in scale has been removed. That's the end of my presentation, Madam Mayor, if okay. there are any questions.
There'll be questions of clarification only, and then we're going to move to RB2. So, Councillor Whitehead, and I'm going to keep you to questions of clarification. Councillor Whitehead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The provision that's now allowing more opportunity for rural development to residential development, I presume, to have private wells or communal wells and septic tanks or sewer systems. What effect does that have, if any, on our policy that in the Palgrave Estate area that states that until the areas that are serviced by the Region Appeal are exhausted, that we wouldn't consider development in the other areas on independent water supply?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Whitehead, that is a very good question that I think we're going to have to look into. Our Palgrave Estate policies are approved, but in our next official plan review, we will have to do a conformity exercise to bring our official plan into conformity with this PPS 2014, and I think we'll have to look at that issue.
Madam Chairman, not to make a statement, but I think it's very important that we notify the province now that we are going to have to consider that issue very seriously in that one area of Caledon where we do have a special policy about the development of the Palgrave Estate area. I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, I'm going to leave in a couple of minutes because I'm going on other municipal business. I'll go on to two other items briefly. This issue that they're now embedding in provincial policy that we can only look at land use for 20 years, but we can look at infrastructure for 50 years. I understand the advantage to that from a development charge standpoint, but are we still going to pursue with them the significant disadvantage of planning infrastructure for 50 or 80 years and being limited to planning use or expansions to 20 years?
Madam Mayor, this is an issue that the town has been raising and certainly raised in its comments on the draft PPS. the province has moved a little bit on this in giving us the ability to identify strategic employment lands beyond 20 years, but we are not allowed to designate lands. That's correct. And there's a disconnect there between the infrastructure planning and the land use planning that this new PPS has not rectified.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not going to be here for the debating of the report. I just want to say, if I can, very briefly, that I think this is moving in the right direction generally. Mm-hmm. But those two concerns of mine, I think, is one shared by all members of council, is how the Palgrave Estate area is treated and this notion of the disconnect on the land use planning versus the services planning. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Councilor Paderak?
Yes. I would think there are a number of things in the PPS which will require us to adjust our official plan. I'm not sure if I'm correct in that statement, but I can see that on the issue of recycled aggregates, we have some rather, I won't say vague, but just a mention that we encourage recycling of aggregate, and now they're embedding this in the PPS. And I guess my question is, in the interim, before we get to our review, how do we deal with this if we get another application?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Paderak, we are required to conform or be consistent with this PPS as of the date it came into effect. So those recycling operations are going to be permitted where they're feasible. And
that's the question. How do you define? Is feasibility a weasel word here, or is it a word that has some strength in terms of us being able to draw a line between this kind of recycled aggregate and that kind of recycled aggregate?
That's correct. And what does feasible mean in terms of impacts on surrounding residents, for example?
Mm-hmm.
You know, will we be able to consider that in assessing whether it's feasible or not? I think we'll need a test case to explore these issues further.
Yeah, well, the test case costs money. That's why I'd like to have it clarified so that we go forward in a progressive manner, mm-hmm. without any confusion. So I just shine a light on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just two questions, Kathy. And again, I would echo Councillor Whitehead's comments that it is moving in the right direction. I don't know it's entirely there, but I believe it's moving in the right direction. When you talked about how the new PPS 2014 allows the municipality to identify employment lands, mm-hmm. post 20 years, but not to designate them, what legal clout does that give us to ensure that they are preserved for employment? If they're not designated, what assurance do we have that they will indeed be protected?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Mazzapelli, this may take the form of policies that similar policies that were used for the GTA West transportation corridor that were in the regional plan and OPA 226. Stating that land uses that would preclude or hinder the development of the transportation corridor would be prohibited. Now, those policies were appealed to the Ontario Municipal Board, and the board will be looking at settlements on those policies on June 27th at the pre-hearing conference. So we expect those policies to be in place fairly soon, and we may be able to put in place a policy framework similar to that, saying that we won't allow land uses on those properties that will preclude the eventual development as employment lands.
Okay. The second question I had was with respect to aggregate, and I know that we have already gone through the exercise of identifying aggregate resources in our community. But when I read the presentation, and there's strong language to ensuring that there's no conflict from a social perspective, environmental, those types of things. Do we, when we've identified aggregate resources, and whether they've been, you know, utilized or not, they're identified, to, and let's assume it hasn't been extracted, do we create a boundary around that so that we will preclude any social impact, so that whatever that reasonable boundary is, we would say in this buffer area, we don't want to permit residential, because if it comes first and then the aggregate comes second, now we've created a conflict. Do we go through that exercise?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Mezzapelli, we went through a similar exercise when we were refining the ministry's aggregate resource mapping. We removed settlement areas from those aggregate resources and looked at other constraints like environmental constraints. The province itself requires that land uses that want to locate in the vicinity of aggregate resources have to demonstrate that there will be no adverse effect on an existing operation or the future use of that resource. So it's almost the reverse of what you're saying. Instead of putting residential, if we want to put residential near a resource, that there's a constraint to that in the policies. You should not really be putting residential there that could be affected by future aggregate resource operation.
Yeah, and I'll just finish with this. I could see, though, that someone who would want to develop that would create a case that would justify it. It's the people that move in and live there that realize the impact and are finding it conflicting. So I would just put out there, and maybe it's already in place, is that we ensure that we create suitable buffers so that if we do have different land use in somewhat proximity to each other, that there's enough of a buffer that they are not conflicting land uses.
Right. The buffer, I believe, is 300 meters for sand and gravel and 500 meters for bedrock.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Beffert.
Thank you, Kathy. Just following up on Councillor Paderak regarding the recycling facilities, the statement itself that you have up on the screen generates assumptions and perceptions and concerns about tainted and contaminated material. Does the province define any more than the statement that you've made what we have to do with regard to recycling, or is that our job to do that when an application comes in?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Beffert, the province has just put in that policy, you know, the simple wording that these operations will be permitted where feasible. So I think it will be up to us to look at the impacts of those operations and ensure that they don't have negative impacts.
So knowing full well that we have new applications coming forward, then what are we doing to establish our guidelines within Caledon to react to that when it happens? Are we looking at a policy or an addition, as Councillor Paderak said, to our OPA?
Yeah, we did a very comprehensive mineral aggregate policy framework in OPA 161.
Correct.
I'm afraid I can't just recall what the specifics were on aggregate recycling operations. I believe they were encouraged because we saw recycling as a way of reducing the need for opening new pits. But in terms of their impacts, I would have to get back to you on what the policy actually says about that.
Isn't that part of the problem, though? So many of us encourage it, and when it comes right down to it, we're concerned about what it means. And I guess that's where we have to make some kind of a statement before we run into our next applications. But thanks for your work.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. Just clarification on the rural economic development, and it's a slide that you have there. They are expanding some of the uses on prime, like we are looking at now, for example, tourism and the value added but it's still not to the same level of the rural land. Now, this is the definition part of it, the rural lands, like the prime ag. We're still going to have a prime ag area. We're going to have rural lands. We're going to have the two definitions, but we're going to have more diversified uses on the prime that we didn't have before.
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor DeBoer. Some of these uses are new on prime ag, but the full suite of uses, such as cemeteries, are not permitted in prime ag. So we still have a differentiation between prime ag and non-prime ag in terms of the uses that are permitted.
But we do have a broader range of uses now permitted on the rural lands.
Yes, we do.
And it doesn't does it designate, or it's a separate policies then with regards to Greenbelt, Oak Ridge and Moraine, NEC?
That's an interesting question, Councillor DeBoer, because the lands that are subject to the Greenbelt Plan, Oak Ridges Moraine, and NEC are subject to the permitted uses policies in those plans. And if those plans are not the same as these new PPS policies, then it's those three plans that prevail.
So it's kind of a bit of a conundrum in the sense that our lands that are rural, essentially, are under those three plans, and the lands that would be rural that could have these broader range of uses are actually future development lands. So we really haven't gained a whole lot as far as the rural economy. So is there any word from the province as to whether during the review of the three plans that we're going to try and catch up the three plans to what this is talking about?
The province is reviewing the three plans, or will be reviewing next year the three plans. We've started our exercise already. Now, what I recall of the Greenbelt Plan, for example, it does allow more tourism-related uses and recreational-related uses. So it may be that it's the PPS that's catching up to the Greenbelt Plan here.
Okay. Okay, I think that was it. We still got to. It'll give us some room, but we should be able to try and catch the rest of it when we go through the review exercise next year. Okay.
Councillor Thompson.
Madam Mayor, are we doing the report as
no,
well?
No, we're not.
Okay,
we're still on the delegation.
Okay, well, my questions are for the report.
Okay.
I just started as the questions were going, I figured.
Yeah, well, I think some have gone on to the report, but anyway, thank you very much. Okay, now we will go to the report, RB2. Moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor McClure, that report DP 2014-030 regarding Provincial Policy Statement Review, Provincial Policy Statement 2014, be received. Councillor Thompson?
Yes, some points of clarification. OPA 179 and the zoning bylaws that we have, I know we're doing reviews OPA 179. I know Kyle's working on it, and I'm just making sure this is all going to dovetail in while we're going through this exercise.
I'll turn that question over to Mr. Sue.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Yes, we are trying to bring the official plan largely into conformity with the new PPS. And also in part to respond to a question from Councilor DeBoer earlier that we have identified a lot of inconsistencies in between the new PPS and the Greenbelt Plan and other provincial plans. And we have asked the provincial staff to respond to us about these inconsistencies and how to deal with them. And we have had one communication with provincial staff, and they looks like they need to seek additional legal assistance before they can respond to us on these. And with this in mind, we do try to bring this in full, largely into a conformity with the PPS, with the new PPS, through OPA 237.
Thank you. And we'll be doing the zoning bylaw reviews, so we'll be able to come into conformity with that as well. And to follow up with Councillor DeBoer real quick, my understanding from what I had heard from a provincial person that
that when we do when the reviews come up for Greenbelt and Oak Ridges Marine, that was for when we ask to have it conform with the provincial policy statement. If we're in favor, if we prefer the provincial policy statement over what the clause is in Greenbelt or Oak Ridges Marine that we're banging up against.
Anybody want? You don't.
I don't think that needs a response.
No,
yes, we can do that.
I don't think it does either.
The other thing I want to have is we're saying cemeteries and private ag lands. It's pretty hard to put a cemetery in prime ag land just because prime ag land has got a value and cemeteries is the return on the investment. But what I'm saying is if we're saying this in prime ag, does this limit us to expand the cemeteries that are already existing in prime agricultural areas?
Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Thompson, just to clarify, cemeteries are not permitted in prime ag. They're permitted.
They exist.
But he's saying they already are there. Could they expand in prime ag because they're already there?
I would have to speculate that that's not permitted.
Yeah, if I may add to this conversation, Madam Mayor, cemetery is clearly defined in the new PPS as an institutional use. And basically, it's not allowed in the agricultural area. But if there is already a cemetery use in prime agriculture area, it requires us to prove that there is no other alternative. And that may prove to be very difficult.
Well, okay, let's just use as a challenge. What is rural and whatever is most lands are significant and highly sensitive, and you're not going to put a graveyard there. The bottom line is people are going to continue to die. We've got to figure out a solution here going forward. And to me, it is compatible with prime ag. You don't need an MDS to put in a graveyard.
Yeah. Madam Mayor, I would say that it's like saying that it's strictly prohibited is probably not accurate. But we would have to take or go through a process to prove that if there is an alternative way to save prime agricultural land. But if there's no alternative, then we could consider it.
Okay, so can I put a bit of a direction? I know the different managers of different church and private cemeteries have got together, they've collaborated, they're sharing a lot of intel here in the town of Caledon. They've had a meeting here about a month ago at Cheltenham, at the Cheltenham Fire Hall. The big challenge is they're running out of plots. They need, and there's an opportunity for some of these areas to expand. I think we're going to have to deal with this. I think we are going to have to start to give some consideration. Does this make sense? And we need to look at it because we don't want it cost prohibitive either.
Okay. I think they've heard you, Councillor. Okay. Thank you. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just one comment I wanted to make was I know looking at the town comments, one thing I had hoped to be in there was a recognition of protection of agriculture, and it didn't make our list. But when I look at the PPS, and I know it's got to be looked at in context with the other provincial policies, 2.3 talks very strongly about protecting agricultural land for long-term use. And in maybe it's somewhat of a unique situation in Caledon where our prime agricultural lands and our largest holdings of prime agricultural lands are in the White Belt. They're not protected by provincial legislation like Oak Ridges Moraine or Green Belt or what have you. So to me, I see that very clearly as conflicting policies within the provincial context where we need to protect agricultural land. And in Caledon's case, our largest and best quality agricultural lands are in lands that have no protection and are expected at, you know, over time to be developed. I find that a conflict that needs to be rectified. And I'm going to continue to talk about that because I feel very strongly that our White Belt needs to have agriculture as a part of that mix. And nothing in the PPS allows us to protect that and to plan for that. I find that challenging. Thanks. Okay.
Councillor Paderak?
Yeah, I guess, you know, those of us that deal with the PPS on a daily basis, it's just there. It's common knowledge, but it's quite an extraordinary document in the sense that it gives a huge amount of direction to the municipality. And I guess what I would like to see from staff is, and this is not just planning staff, but our people who are writing our press releases and such, to have some explanation to the public about the context in which we do our planning and how important it is that we, and not important, it's required, that we follow this provincial policy document. And I would think that we should have on our own website and in our press releases links to the document so that the public can become more informed. And on a daily basis, I'm talking to people about aggregate policy, and a lot of people just do not want to accept the fact that we have a provincial policy statement and what kind of force it carries in the legal planning framework in which we operate. So we need help. We need help. And I've been criticized lately by some of my residents that I'm too pedantic and too instructional. But how do I communicate with my residents if we can't speak the same language? And that's why I think we as a town have to step up and try to bring our residents along and say, we want some of the same things you want, but here are the rules that somebody else has put in our, in on our table.
With your permission, Madam Mayor, if I may just offer a quick clarification on this, that yes, indeed, amongst staff ourselves, we do feel that there are increasingly provincial regulations and policies being imposed on us, and we are worried about it. If you compare with the planning process before 2006 or before the growth plan comes into effect, the planning we were doing here locally were very different from the kind of planning we're doing today. It was a planning we mostly prepare based on our own needs, and then we work with peer region or upper tier municipality to secure the service, and then we let it go ahead. And now today, the planning is basically being almost entirely dominated by provincial growth numbers down to peer region, and then growth numbers down to the town of Caledon. And then we have to react and conform under provincial legislations to these growth numbers. And likewise, in the aggregate areas, like the Aggregate Resources Act, basically it gives the approval authority of a new licensed quarry pits to the Ministry of Natural Resources. And we are almost like a commenting agency if there's a case of a site plan amendment. Although in the land use part, we do have approval authority, but really, you know, there's not much of a say at a lower tier municipal level. And we are very concerned about this, and we have been raising this issue to provincial agencies and ministries numerous times to ask them to pay more attention to our community needs. There are people living in these areas, and they have been living in these areas for a very long time, and they have true interest that need to be taken into consideration in these approval. It's very unfortunate that provincial staff in a number of cases thinking that we are talking about not in my backyard kind of stuff. And that is very disappointing. And I just wanted to let you know, Madam Mayor, staff not entirely agree with this provincial approach. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You finished, Councillor Paderak?
Yes.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer?
Thanks. There is a lot of, lack of a better word, a lot of stuff here. So I think we're probably going to have to watch as it rolls out. But I think, too, just a comment about Rob's concern with agriculture and it not protecting agriculture. I think as an industry person, we don't want protection through land designation. I think our industry made it perfectly clear that that isn't the way to go. We want what this statement talks about, and it was with broader range of uses. We want the ability to be successful in the marketplace. We want to be able to derive our revenue from the work that we do and not be designated an agricultural area just because society deems that this land should be protected for agriculture. I think that was always the argument that the industry made with the Greenbelt Plan. I don't think it's deviated anything from that. But the comment here at the end of on the report on 2.6, page 7 of 10, the agriculture-related uses, if we end up having that statement so that it's available to, it's at the bottom of the page, agriculture-related use means those farm-related commercial, farm-related industrial uses that directly relate to farm operations in the area, support agriculture benefiting from being close to the proximity. If those kind of statements end up being part of the green belt, then we do have a starting point, because a lot of our industry that support us, and the one that we just went through, our feed and fertilizer dealer, can remain in the area and remain in the green belt, which is agriculture, to allow us to, as an industry, go through the diversified uses on the project we're going through with Kyle. Those are things that are important. So I think, you know, to give the other side of the story from where Rob's comment is about having dedicated protecting of farmland. I think you've always made it clear to us that it isn't an automatic that the white belt's going to develop. There is still a fairly extensive process to remove farmland out into the expansion. And I think that's a comment that you probably need to have brought up, that it isn't just automatic. There still has to be a lot of tests and a lot of demonstrated need and all the other stuff that you keep talking about. So it's not an automatic. So I think that that's just, you know, talking about just the one area that's very important, and you'd outlined it in the report, but unless it actually ends up being part of the Green Belt, the Oak Ridges Moraine, the NEC, you know, it's something that's going to benefit the rural part of Ontario that isn't covered under those plans. We need those. If we want to have that kind of an industry here, we need to have those words as part of the exercise next year. So, you know, other than that, I think, you know, it's going to be, as we go through our conformity and bring our official plan and do all that work, that'll be where we really end up being able to understand what it all means, because there's a lot here. So, but thanks.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other speakers, but I have a few questions. One is, I did flag the part where it says municipalities are required to identify deposits of mineral aggregate resources where provincial information is available. And in 161, we did that. It's just that some people don't agree with it. And I do think that it really is important, excuse me, especially since we have new aggregate applications coming forward, that people understand our aggregate policies, because I don't think they do. Or maybe they choose not to. You know, that's their choice, but they certainly don't seem to understand it. I just want to say that the Greater Toronto Countryside Mayors Alliance was very, very involved in trying to get some of these policies changed, and the town of Caledon was in line with what we were trying to do, and that's really nice. And I know that the GTCMA was given two seats at the table going through these with the province, and we had Ben Roberts from the town of Caledon there, and we also had another gentleman from, I think it was York Region, a planner there. And they worked with, I know Ben worked with the Peel Federation of agriculture, and at first we were going to have this little committee of the Peel Federation to work on these things, but Ben was taking it directly back, so we ended up not having this little committee because Ben attends every federation meeting, which is excellent, Norm, and he has been a really strong voice at the table on the provincial policy changes and statements for agriculture, and I just wanted to say that he has been outstanding, taking our message forward. So, I think that it's had an impact, And I'm going to certainly get in touch with the Greater Toronto Countryside Mayors to let them know that, you know, some of the things that we were advocating for actually are in the mm-hmm. changes. And all 14 of the municipalities were on side for those changes. So I think it carried some weight, and it was excellent. excuse me. We've been lobbying for some time on the long-term strategic planning beyond the 20-year planning horizon and trying to make sure that we could designate where major infrastructure needs to be and where employment lands need to be. And then you wouldn't have a developer coming in buying up land, and then we have a major highway coming through, and they say, oh, no, I want houses. My return's better on houses. Well, too bad, because it's more important for us to have our employment lands in the right place. So I was really, really glad to see that. And but it says here that the identification on 2.5, the second, the paragraph sitting there, first one, the identification and protection of employment lands in strategic locations. So that tells me that not only can we identify where they should be, we can protect them. So that tells me that in our official plan and in the region's official plan, we can put protection in there. And I think that's what I heard Councillor Thompson trying to say. We need to do more than just identify. Well, we can. We can protect. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to the next council, you know, looking at this GTA West Economic Corridor and this hydro corridor and everything, and then picking the key strategic areas where we need employment that can quickly get to market and protecting those areas in our official plan for employment. And then it will very quickly and easily roll out where these new communities of residential will be. So I was pleased to see that. The Greater Toronto Countryside Mayors also worked really hard on making sure that that there would be more flexibility for the agricultural and rural land uses, because there needs to be. And that doesn't mean contractor yards, folks. I'm talking something that directly impacts agriculture and but gives flexibility on farm. And one of the things I was thinking when I was reading it on 2.6, it says a stipulation that value-added agricultural products must be from the farm has been removed. Yes. Well, we should get in touch with Downey's and Broadway Farms immediately and tell them, because I think John Downey will be jumping up and down saying, well, finally, I've been saying that for years. Because I remember when he first started, we as a town coming down on him because he was selling milk. And not from the cow that he had in the back milking, mm-hmm. but because he was bringing milk in. Well, of course, because all the milk goes to the dairy thing. They get processed and pasteurized and homogenized, and then it comes back. But because he couldn't identify it was from his cow or his cows, he couldn't sell it. It was absolutely ludicrous. So I'm really, really pleased to see that they're finally starting to get it a little bit. So thank you very much. Great work. I look forward to it going even further, and thank you. I read the motion earlier. Oh, I've got more people. Councillor Patterak.
Just very quickly, you mentioned that we had already identified the aggregate resources in our official plan, and we've actually done a whole lot better than that, in that under the guidance of Kathy many years ago, when we did the Caledon Community Resource Study, we took that mapping and then we refined it, which brought it from thousands of hectares to about 60% of what was originally suggested. And that was a very time-consuming, exhaustive process. It took nearly 3 years. And Kathy was a big part of that. And I just, new councillors might not remember that, but she deserved a lot of credit for sticking with it. It was very controversial at the time. We have a lot of residents now that have no memory of it, and that's right. One of the bits of baggage that we have to carry. But we did a whole lot better than what the province is saying. That's the point I wanted to make.
And in fact, I thought we took almost 50% of the aggregate deposits off the map and had M&R agree with us, or else people could have aggregate being mined all around them everywhere. But we got almost 50% off the map. So I agree, the people today, a lot of the newcomers, don't even know that. Mm-hmm. They think, anyway. Councillor Thompson?
Real quick, Madam Mayor, I just wanted to clarify that Ben Roberts has also been involved with the Greater Toronto Agricultural Action Group,
I know,
as well as the Golden Horseshoe.
Yeah.
And those meetings would go late, and he's back in the office the next morning at 8:30. I really appreciate the dedication and what he's brought to the table and taken the information away. So not just the Federation, but he's gone the extra mile, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah. No, he's kind of our agriculture expert in-house. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor of the motion? Thank you. It's carried. Okay, I'm going to ask Council if we can go to 13, 14, and 15 because we have people here and some people have to leave. So we're going to go to 13, please. Oh. Okay, I was just asked if we do 14 first. Okay, so we'll go to 14 and then 15 and then we'll go back to 13. So 14, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor McClure, that report DP 2014-009 regarding proposed draft plan of subdivision and zoning bylaw amendment applications, KLM Planning Partners, Inc., on behalf of Digram Developments, Caledon, part of Lot 19, Concession 2, EHS, Chingacuzzi, designated as Parts 3 to 6, Plan 43R-34717-12304, Heart Lake Road, west side of Learmont Avenue, north of Abbott's Sideway, Southfields Community, within the Mayfield West Secondary Plan, Ward 2, be received, and that a bylaw be enacted to rezone the subject lands from agricultural A1 to mixed-density residential exception RMD-456. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB-15. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Patterack. That report DP 2014-053 regarding proposed draft plan of subdivision and zoning bylaw amendment applications, Yeoman Developments, Inc., part of Lot 21, Concession 1, EHS Chingacuzzi, 12600 Kennedy Road, west side of Kennedy Road, south of Old School Road, and north of Learmont Avenue, Southfields Community, within the Mayfield West Secondary Plan, Ward 2, be received, and that the street tree planting for the subject development be located within the public boulevard, and that a bylaw be enacted to rezone the subject lands from agricultural A1 to a site-specific mixed-density residential RMD-X exception zone and open space OS zone, and that no further notice or public meeting be required for the above-referenced zoning bylaw pursuant to Section 3417 of the Planning Act, RSO, CP 13, as amended. Any questions? Councillor Thompson.
I have one that I want to put on notice, and I do know that the Habitat for Humanity is not going on this particular draft plan, but as anything's coming forward, I will not support it until I have it firmed up on where it's going to go. And I know there's a lot of applicants, and a lot of this stuff is going to be coming forward in the next couple of months, but I want to put notice out there, Madam Mayor, that this is part of it, and I'm willing to let it go this time. I was debating if we should have it, you know, put all, say that we want it, might be redlined, but I get it isn't in this section, but I think I want that Habitat of Humanity protected. It's been pushed off, and we're running out of our opportunity to be able to use a stick anymore.
Well, it better be there because it was part of the agreement, so.
Well, it's a concern that I've got, so I want staff on notice on.
Through you, Madam Mayor, to Councillor Thompson, staff have had a meeting with Habitat for Humanity. They are talking with the Moss Corp group,
yes,
on a piece of property. I have not been advised that piece of property is not in discussion anymore. There is some policy issues and obviously some submissions of documents and things like that that have to move forward because they are doing a townhouse proposal and those types of things will move forward. But at this point in time, nothing has been compromised.
I realize that one's gone sideways, and my concern is before any more applications, I want that somehow. I don't know what I can do.
So we have not been told that anything has gone sideways.
Yeah.
So I will check into that for
Thank you,
Councillor Thompson, and get back to you on it because we have not been advised that.
Because the last thing I heard, and that was a few weeks ago, talking to Thomas from Habitat, they were still talking and, yes. and scaling down to exactly.
Yeah, but I want to make sure that opportunity isn't lost as we go forward because we're running out.
Well, it was part of the whole agreement, so it better not be lost.
It is a requirement.
Okay. Yes. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB 13. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Paderak. That report, CS 2014-065, regarding public sector network, PSN, fiber network expansion opportunity to the Caledon Equestrian Park site be received, and that Council approves the Manager of Purchasing and Risk Management and Senior Manager of Information Technology to enter into discussions with the firms used by Bell and Rogers for the construction of their fiber optic networks to assess the costs of building a fiber optic connection, PSN, to the Caledon Equestrian Park, and that a new 2014 capital project in the amount of $250,000 be established for the public sector network PSN expansion opportunity at the Caledon Equestrian Park site and be funded from existing capital projects 13-093, 13-094, and 14-084 as outlined in report CS 2014-065. Councillor Thompson.
Yes, Madam Mayor, thank you. Could I just like to ask staff is this is burying the cable versus what we have a lot of it is hung off poles, correct? That'll be.
Sorry, your question is whether it's going to be buried underground or aerial. Well, no, my understanding is that the majority of this would be aerial. However, that's not been finalized yet, and on the actual equestrian park site, that would be buried.
Okay. The question, the reason why I'm asking that question is we watch, it's coming up to Old Church Street, and I was saying if it's aerial, how much, like the big thing is, yes, we have a system that runs up Ennis Lake, but if someone hits one of those hydro poles on the road, everything goes down, right? And I'm just wondering if there's an opportunity in the future. And I got to say, you got to be congratulated. This is a great collaboration. And whoever's put this together, this is a good news story. But I'm just saying, I'm always looking ahead. Is what way can we get it now from Highway 50 across Old Church to Town Hall so that we have a backup system in place should anything go wrong? I'm just trying to visualize what our next opportunities are.
Okay. I think you've heard looking into that sort of thing.
We are aware of that issue, Councillor Thompson, and we are exploring ways of bringing other redundant connections back to the town hall site. Just one clarification is that the single point of failure you're referring to along Ennis Lake Road isn't only for the town. It's all the fiber that comes up this way comes up that same road. So the other providers are also interested, and so I'm looking continuously for opportunity to see where we can work together, and I think this particular opportunity may open some new routes for us to explore, but it's still very early stages for that.
Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a couple of questions. And I know that this is a partnership with some of the other providers. So will it be basically equally cost-shared amongst the parties, like between Bell and Rogers and the town?
We haven't arrived at what the final arrangement will be at this time. What we're looking at is what are the total costs of the design, engineering, and construction, and then what are the incremental costs for adding the PSN fiber. It would probably be safe to assume that we would probably share it equally amongst the three of us, which is significantly less than any of us trying to attempt to do this on our own.
Okay. And I fully support, you know, trying to bring this connection to as many areas and facilities as possible. When I read on 13.1, bringing it past Albion Hills Conservation, and allowing it to be spliced off and brought into that facility. That would be at the TRCA's cost to bring it from 50 into their facility?
Yes, the costs that are in the report we're talking about today don't include connecting those other facilities. It's just for the equestrian park and the town facility up there, the fire station. But we haven't worked out all of those details yet. Once we have a better assessment of what the costs are, the TRCA is also in making inquiries about their budget availability for being able to splice off of that and bring it into their the conservation area as well. And we don't have those costs at this time. But the intent is that they would take the responsibility for their own hookup. And through the PSN, we're negotiating their access to some of the fiber strands in the cable.
Okay, so but that would be their cost. I just wanted to clarify that, if they chose to hook up to it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. The other question I had, Madam Mayor, was when I read down to the on 13.2, the largest paragraph there, it talks about this project is based on Bell and Rogers receiving appropriate approvals to construct a telecommunications tower at the Caledon Equestrian Park, which is some point out in the future. Question I have is, if for whatever reason they are unsuccessful in getting that tower there, what does that mean to the project? Are they out of stringing it at all, or would they do it regardless?
No, the tower is a catalyst point for them bringing fiber. So one of the things that we've been discussing with them is the business case that they would need in order to justify the capital expenditure. And so the tower in question that you're referring to is a key component of that business case.
Okay, so, but to be clear, if that tower, again, for whatever reason, is not approved, does that affect running that cable up to Palgrave and through to 9? Are they still looking to do that, failing the tower, or is it contingent on the tower?
They would not likely do that run if there were no tower to do the run to.
And what would that mean to this project then? It would have to be brought back and reviewed?
We would have to look at the cost of the town going it alone, and council would determine whether that was a worthwhile investment at that point and whether or not we might be able to arrange another type of a partnership. But this particular combination of partners from both the private telecom companies and the town and some of the other bodies is hinged on that tower. So they are supplying the fiber to the tower, and while they're doing that, they're going to be stringing their cable along the routes that are in the council report, and PSN is latching on to that construction project.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Councillor Beffert?
Yes. My only question is, does this project lend itself to applying for some of the grants that the federal government has just announced for P3 partnerships? Apparently there's quite a significant amount of money.
Mr. Lingard?
Through you, Madam Mayor, to Councillor Beffert. I know that the program was announced a couple of months ago,
right,
by the federal government for expansion of rural broadband. My discussions or my investigations details are very limited at this point as far as what the federal government is proposing.
Right.
Discussions with the telcos, we've met with them on several occasions over the last couple of months, is that there's Caledon is not considered rural enough to qualify for any of those programs. So I seriously don't expect that we will receive anything. When they talk rural, they're talking areas like Nunavut and rural Newfoundland. I mean, they're not talking Caledon. We're part of the GTA.
I think we're confusing two things. The mayor recently sent an email to all of us outlining the new federal grants. This was most recently.
It's not the one you're talking about.
Which I agree probably wouldn't fit us.
I think probably Mr. Wong can answer that.
Okay.
Through you, Mayor Morrison. That new grant, yes, it does open up opportunities for the P3 partnership, but my understanding is that the intent of the P3 grant is for larger projects that are over $100 million. This is not anywhere near that range, but we will look at it again to see whether or not we do qualify.
Great. Thank you.
Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to be supporting the motion. I see the value in the public-private partnership and in doing this right at the moment. I did want to express a little bit of disappointment because we had a great conversation at council back at budget time about how much we wanted Wi-Fi in our facilities, and that ended up taking a back seat at budget time. And so here we are partway through the year with a new capital project to fund and a considerable amount of money that's talking, and I understand this is not Wi-Fi, but it's still about connectivity, and it's talking about benefits for TRCA's Albion Hills, about future connectivity opportunities and that sort of thing. I don't want staff to lose sight of the fact that we have existing facilities that are still wanting connectivity. That free Wi-Fi is something I think that, for myself, public still asks for it. People still ask why we don't have it. Is that going to come back in the way of a report, or would it take a motion to reinstigate that conversation?
Oh, Mr. Kaufman.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, to Councillor Foley, you will recall that Council did ask a number of times during last budget process to consider Wi-Fi, and we brought a proposal to Council to be considered as part of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Council then decided to reallocate that proposal to other capital projects. So I would say that at this point in time in 2014, that project is nowhere on the horizon. However, Council at any point in time, and I would say it would have to be a prerogative of the new council, because this council can't commit, the next council. If there is a wish to have that re-explored, staff would at any time be happy to bring forward another proposal in the capital to see if council had the appetite to fund that ahead of all your other capital priorities.
Okay.
Because this isn't about Wi-Fi. This is definitely about running fiber and better broadband connectivity in that area of the town.
I completely understand that. It was just about how do we address an existing need when we're looking, you know, obviously at ones that are future needs.
In the budget.
Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. The first question, I think it was outlined one of the other councillors. It still has to go through, the tower still has to go through its process, and that's fine. The other part was Rogers is bringing the line, where's the map? Rogers is coming down from Mono Mills from their tower. Is that why they're coming that way? And Bell is coming from Bolton because of their tower. Is that why they're coming two different directions?
Yes. So Rogers already has fiber in that area, and so that's how they would supply the tower. The history there is Rogers was also looking to put a tower in the Palgrave area, and by working with Bell and Rogers, we've arranged for them to co-locate. So they will be supplying fiber to the tower from that approximate location, and Bell has fiber in Bolton, so they would be bringing it up from Bolton. And Bolton is where the northmost point is for PSN's fiber, and that's where we would latch on to that particular pole there.
And then when the link is completed, it goes to Mono Mills to complete that part of the circuit. The other one was accessibility for the residents in the area. For example, I'm thinking Rogers, as far as cable, comes into Cedar Mills, but I don't know if it actually comes up to Palgrave. Does, like, cable TV use the same technology, the fiber, or is that a totally different technology?
They are, through Mayor Morrison, the technologies are very different but essentially accomplish the same purpose. In this particular case, I would assume that providers like Rogers would leverage their fiber infrastructure, which gives them greater capacity to get data back and forth, regardless of whether that's TV signal data or voice or internet data, and then branch off from particular points using then other modes such as wireless, Wi-Fi, or coax, which would be their traditional cable business. But I think it's more important to keep in mind that the fact that fiber's coming would be coming into the area enables a number of opportunities for them to offer those services. And that would be up to those particular providers to determine which services they would like to offer and where.
Okay. And back to the whole discussion on free Wi-Fi, I guess, toward the new council, and the recommendation would be for a workshop next year to explain how free Wi-Fi is.
Councilor McClure.
Yes, thank you. My stand-in is that we should stay away from fiber network expansion funding. I think everybody doesn't use it, and I think private industry or the cattle and equestrian park should fund it. We have enough trouble funding roads, culverts, and fire equipment. That's just my stand. I won't be voting for this. That's just my stand on it.
Okay, thank you. Everyone heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion? Opposed? Okay, it's carried. Thank you. Okay, we will go back to section 11. Actually, we will start with our in-camera, moved by Councilor Beffert, seconded by Councilor Mazzapelli, the confidential report DP 2014-036 regarding a personal matter about an identifiable individual, including municipal or local board employees, 2014 Heritage Caledon Award of Excellence be received, and that Council approves the recommended recipient of the 2014 Heritage Caledon Award of Excellence as directed. All those in favor? Carried. Okay, there aren't any announcements, no urgent business. Are there any notices of motion? Okay. Councillor Paderak?
I have one that's mercifully brief. Whereas the Pits and Quarries bylaw was written in 1985 and in many areas does not reflect contemporary aggregate license site plan requirements, hereby be it resolved that staff review the Pits and Quarries bylaw and report back to Council on process to update the bylaw.
Okay, and it'll be dealt with in 2 weeks at the next Council meeting. Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to RB3. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Paderak, that report CS 2014-037 regarding the 2013 year-end actual to budget operating variance be received, and that the 2013 operating budget surplus in the amount of $1,057,446 be transferred to a self-insured loss insurance reserve in the amount of $365,000 to fund additional supplement assessment from the Ontario Municipal Insurance Exchange, OMEX. B, tax levy funded capital reserve fund in the amount of $638,354 for future capital expenditures. And C, fund the remaining portion of the Caledon Animal Shelter Project, capital project 00-009 in the amount of $54,092. And that the $10 surcharge for dog license originally collected to fund the Caledon Animal Shelter be allocated to a new reserve for future animal shelter facility repairs and or a new animal shelter facility, and that the OMEX supplement assessment of $847,980 be accrued as an expense in 2014 and paid from the self-insurance loss insurance reserve over 2015 to 2019 for cash flow. Are there any questions? Okay, Councillor Beffert.
Yes, Madam Mayor. This council has actively indicated that they would like to support a new facility to replace the swimming pool in Caledon Village. My question is regarding the tax levy funded capital reserve fund. I'm not saying it will be. My question is, could part of that fund go to a new facility should we as a council agree that a new facility would be built on the west side?
Ms. Tollett?
So you're referring to the Caledon pool, sorry?
Yes. Well, it would be the replacement facility for it.
I believe a resolution was put through to take the operating budget in the meantime to put forward for future replacement of that.
Correct.
But if council directs us to put money aside from the capital tax and reserve, we can do that.
So my question is, if we put this money into the tax levy funded capital reserve, if at some point in the future we need some money, could it come out of that fund?
It could if council chooses that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Councillor Thompson.
I support the motion and what it stands for, but it's just on RB 3.3, and unfortunately Mary Hall isn't here, but I'll just bring it up, is if you look down where the unfavorable on the subdivisions and condos and where the DAP is sitting, I do know on some of them the big challenge is trying to get the site plan approvals, and I honestly think that we wouldn't have an unfavorable if we can somehow find a way to expedite our site plan approvals. And hopefully with the new computerized system, that'll help. But I think that you can see it's costing us money the way we're going about it. It's just a comment.
Okay. Councilor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just one question. I'm just wondering if I could get a little background on the OMAX supplement assessment of $847,000. Just not too sure exactly what that's for.
Okay, through you, Mayor Morrison. So every, let's say, 5 years, we get an adjustment from the insurance provider, and it's not just for the town, it's for all municipalities, it's for the whole area. And it's an assessment based on the claims that are done from the whole province, I would say. And so the amount that we have to pay is spread over 5 years. We're just actually coming to the end of one from the last assessment back in 2009. So this one will carry us from 2015 to 2019.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And further to what Councillor Thompson said, actually, on 3.5, if you look at the transfers from reserves, and they're talking about the different amounts of monies, and the $77,073 unfavorable variance relating to a vacancy in DAP for a community planner that was to be funded by reserve, however not required, that's part of why we have the problems we have, where we're not getting things done because we have these vacancies and we somehow need to ramp it up. So and that affects income also. So, yeah, I agree. I flagged it all, too, and said, that just really reiterated it to me. Okay, thank you very much. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Thank you. Move on to RB4. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli, that report CS 2014-038 regarding Treasurer's Investment Report for 2013 be received. Are there any questions? Seeing none. I just want to say that you're doing a wonderful job. actually, it's fairly impressive. So all those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB5. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Beffert, that report CS 2014-039 regarding development charges reserve fund balances for 2013 be received, and that the Treasurer forward a copy of report CS 2014-039 to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing in accordance with the Development Charges Act 1997. Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
It was just a question on investment income, and I guess it pertains to the last one, but I just thought of it here as the DC reserves came up. When you have investment income, does it get offset on the developer side, the DC side, as well as the town contribution side? How does that get dealt with?
Through Mayor Morrison, this just impacts our reserves, and we apply a certain amount of interest on the DC and several other reserves based on the interest rate at the time, and we do it on a monthly basis.
So it is applied and it has to be accounted for in that fund?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Thompson. Okay, Mr. Wong, can you explain that, please? Yeah.
Excuse me. Through Mayor Morrison, we provide credits, development charge credits on the roadside primarily for works that were upfronted by the developer. And in this situation, we provided more credits than the work that was done. This is not a concern because there's still a lot more work to be done.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB6. Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Paderak, that report CS 2014-040 regarding Municipal Performance Measurement Program report for 2013 be received, and that the treasurer forward a copy of this report to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing in accordance with the Municipal Act 2001. Are there any questions on it? Seeing none, all those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB7, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Patterack. That report CS 2014-041 regarding 2013 lease financing agreement summary report be received, and that pursuant to the leasing policy in the purchasing bylaw 2013-107, Council accepts and agrees with the opinion of the Treasurer that the total number of all financing leases of the following categories already entered into in 2013, remaining active in 2014, or proposed to be entered into in 2014, have not and will not result in a material impact for the municipality. A, leases for office equipment, including photocopiers, multifunctional printers, which have been entered into in accordance with the town's purchasing policy, and B, leases of real estate or real property, leases of real property, where the lease is nominal, token consideration, or consideration that does not exceed the materiality level of the audited financial statements. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB8, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor McClure. That report CS 2014-055 regarding 2014 capital status report be received, and that an additional vehicle purchase be approved and funded for the Fire and Emergency Services Department by consolidating Project 14-011 for a training officer vehicle and 14-108 for fleet vehicle, and that purchase of a bucket truck be replaced by large equipment for the Public Works and Engineering Department funded by the existing capital project number 14-078, and that a new 2014 project be approved for an accessibility audit, Bolton Rotary Place in the amount of $5,000 funded from the accessibility reserve, and that the following 2014 capital projects be established and funded by balances of older projects that are substantially complete, and it's as listed A to E. That the five existing projects be closed and consolidated as per Table 3 of Report CS 2014-055, that 36 capital projects listed in Appendix A to Report CS 2014-055 be closed, and the unaudited net capital project surplus of $1,276,999.24 be transferred back to the original sources of funding, and that the Treasurer be authorized to reopen any closed project for technical adjustments required, including the payment of subsequent invoices, deficient work, or other payments related to a capital project, and to draw funds from original funding sources, reserves, up to the budget surplus amount. Councillor Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My first question is on C on the first page. Is generator for Snow Grove Fire Station. My question is, have we factored in at hooking that up to the Margaret Dunn Community Center as well? Subject that we have in our, I believe, because that is our backup system for our emergency, for fire, I get it. But the question is for Margaret Dunn, as a warming center, we've been through this once before, it wouldn't be that much of a cost to be able to hook the generator up to run it too.
Okay. Mr. Loveridge.
That's for you, Mayor Morrison. Councillor Thompson, the Snell Grove generator is just for that facility alone. My colleague here says that the Margaret Dunn has not at this point been identified as a warming center for the town of Caledon.
All I'm just saying is we're putting an infrastructure in, and for a very minimal fee, we could have a backup generator, and it could be a warming center for, because we really haven't got much in the thing. And I know we haven't looked at it, but this is an opportunity that it'll be a shame not to capitalize. It's the same thing with what we're going through now with the arena from Town Hall. All I'm just saying is
okay, well, maybe staff can have a look at that.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, we can take a look at it, Councillor, but at this point, we've designed the backup power generator, and I think we're ready to go out to contract fairly quickly on it, and it's size specific for that facility as it sits. So
that's a shame. That's okay. A real shame. Can I also ask you, I see you got two hot boxes down here. How soon can we have those hot boxes in the road, and do we have crews to man them? Because the roads are a mess. We know it.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, Councillor Thompson, the staff is already working on, we have the specifications, we're working on it. Our hope is to be out to tender as soon as we can. We need them. It's not a long-term need. It's an immediate need.
I know. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First question I have is with respect to the creation of these five capital projects. And the first one is for Coleraine Drive in the amount of $286,000. And when I look into the report, it's to finish up, I believe, land acquisitions related to that. And further on, when I read report RB23, where the region is uploading that and assuming costs associated with the bypass, just wanted to ask, is this actually a municipal obligation, or is it one that the region should assume?
Through you, Mayor Morrison, this is actually a different project. This was related, this is not part of the uploaded project.
No, but it's an uploaded road. So my question is, it seems that the region, upon assumption of the road, will assume all costs related to the road. This project is related to the road, and yet it's a municipal cost. Just wondering why that hasn't been uploaded to the region.
Mr. Wong?
Through Mayor Morrison, I just want to clarify that we have been in negotiations with the Region of Peel, and they want us to take care of all outstanding issues before it gets uploaded. This is one of the outstanding issues. So it is something that we have to settle, we have to pay for it, and then it gets uploaded.
Okay, are you finished, Councillor Mazzapelli?
Is the funding part of the debt that they're taking over?
Yes.
Okay. Next question I had was the HVAC that's currently in the Caledon pool. It's going to be transported and stored. And it talks about another facility. Is that just being stored for now? Because I understand, looking at the date of the budget, it's probably pretty new. So we're just storing it for now?
Okay, Ms. Scott.
Through you, Madam Mayor, the HVAC unit is currently still at Caledon Central Pool, and we are looking to relocate it in July or August. We need a crane to move it. It is of significant size, and we need to do it because it's located on school board property. So once it's moved, either in July or August, it will be stored at the vendor's storage location, so we don't risk voiding the warranty on the item, and then it is being put into the Pan Am, considerations being put into the Pan Am scope for it to be utilized at that facility.
Okay, all right, that was my next question. Last question I had is, when I looked at the funding for the five new capital projects, some of the older projects that we want to close out that we're talking about drawing the money from them, when I look at the breakdown of those individual capital projects, a lot of them look like they don't have any funds left in them. So, like, for example, the Snell Grove Fire Station is one of them, the generator. When I look at the budget and what was spent, there's a zero balance, and yet it is identified as one of the funding sources.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, on that schedule we show it as, because as the transferred rate took place. So it's just showing that the actuals and the budget to equal is zero, and then we still have to set up these projects to add up the other 900,000 potentially for these five projects. So in that schedule, it does show that there's no money left because we're transferring it to these new ones already.
Okay, all right. That's it for myself, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. The first question is with regards to the generator, and I imagine it's 135,000 is just a budgeted amount. It's not what you're actually figuring the generator is going to cost, because the generator for that facility should be nowhere near that price.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, that currently is the budgeted amount, including the purchase, installation, and all the wiring to go with it. We don't know what the final amount will be until we've closed the tender.
because I have to pull my papers out, but I think from the guy that put my generator in our facility, which probably draws not a whole lot more than the fire hall, I could put about four in. So that was the first concern. The trail resurfacing, are we looking at now a budget line for $100,000 a year, or is that just the total when they add those two together and it hasn't been utilized yet? That's on table three.
Thank you, Mayor Morrison. We're just consolidating them so that they can use it under one. They get $50,000 per year, and it just makes it easier for accounting purposes to have an under one project.
Okay, so it would safe it to say that there's just the $50,000 from allocated from this year that probably hasn't been used. It's not that it carries right. That balance. Okay. And all the hot boxes are nice, but maybe like a paving machine would probably be better.
Okay, Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most of my questions were answered. I just have one left. It was regarding the Bolton Road replace, the accessibility audit. Will this audit cover the exterior of the property as well as the interior of the building? I'm thinking specifically about, will it capture any accessibility issues in the parking lot?
My understanding is because we didn't assume the building, it wasn't under our ownership when the original accessibility audit was completed. Right. It's added in, so whatever we covered in the original audit will be covered under this budget item. That's my understanding.
So you don't know whether or not that will include?
I believe it does.
It would. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor McClure.
Yes, I don't know much. I just like to know where you ordered the generator from. Yes, the same question as Councillor DeBruer, because sounds like you're buying four or five of them.
I think what we just heard is that they're going out to tender, but it's not just for the generator, it's for the wiring, it's for the installation, it's for everything.
I think we're still being rooked.
Okay. Through you, Mayor Morrison, Councillor McClure.
Have you talked to
that's
Summers?
That's the budget that currently exists today. We have the specification for the generator for that facility. It's right sized, and the market will speak. You know, I think that the budget as it sits today may be a bit high, or it is high, but let's let the market speak and see what comes in from our tender process.
Okay, I'd like to hear from you where you're buying it from before you're done.
When we're completed the tender, we'll bring that forward to council for your information, councillors.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, I missed one question I had. Looking at the funding sources for these closed projects, I do notice that the lion's share of the surplus is from one capital project, 09-072, the financial system. I just want to understand, was the full scope of that project realized and it just came in at such a lower price, or was it the scope of it altered to reflect that lower price?
Mr. Wong.
Through Mayor Morrison, when we completed the tender on the financial system, we actually wrote a report. It was a good news story where we reported that we got basically what we wanted at a lower price than what we budgeted for. So it is a true budget savings. We got the system that we want. You'll also notice in the report that we also identified that we want to add one or two more modules that we want to add on to the financial system that will enhance it. But in essence, we realized the scope.
Okay. Just, I guess, a final point for me, Madam Mayor, and I always love seeing projects that come in under budget, and this one's hugely under budget. The flip side of that is during budget negotiations, when we're nickel and diming with money that's allocated, that's a significant amount of money that we could have utilized. So I just put that out there as just a general comment. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Baffert?
Yes, I'd like to go back to the generator just for a moment, nothing to do with cost. David, recently being on the Finance Committee at Headwaters Hospital, I learned something that I was not aware of, and that is that during severe inclement weather times, like this past winter, they are heating with gas. There's a point at which Enbridge Gas cuts off the gas to the hospital, and they have to go on their auxiliary system because there's not enough flow available through the system, and the government makes this demand, and because the hospitals have such large systems. Does that happen in the municipality of the town of Caledon?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. I'm not sure, Councillor Befford, but I'd be more than willing to check and see what happens. I've never heard of that before.
I had never heard of it either, and I just wondered if we were on a list where that would happen if we had such a severe winter again. And maybe I'm assuming that the fire hall is heated by gas, and that in the event that we would have to, then we'd have to have a backup of something else, because the generator will run on gas. Is that correct?
Mayor Morrison, Councillor Befford, we have emergency contracts in place to supply our generators on a regular basis, and as we add more generators, that will be part of the service agreement we have with our supplier.
If you could check that out, because it was absolute news to me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Oops. Okay, we'll move on to RB9, moved by Councillor McClure, seconded by Councillor Mazzapelli, that report CS 2014-056 regarding 2013 audited financial statements be received, and that the Corporation of the Town of Caledon consolidated financial statements for the year ended December 31st, 2013 be approved. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB10, moved by Councillor McClure, seconded by Councillor Paderak, that report CS 2014-057 regarding audited reserves and reserve fund balances for 2013 be received, and that the tax rate stabilization reserve be renamed the accessibility reserve for the purpose of identifying and removing barriers to accessibility in town-owned facilities and open spaces. Are there any questions? All those in favor? Carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB11, moved by Councillor Befford, seconded by Councillor Mazzapelli, that report CS 2014-061 regarding ice storm assistance program be received, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign and submit an expression of interest to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing to the program for provincial assistance for the 2013 ice storm, and that the treasurer be authorized to sign and submit claims related to the ice storm on behalf of the town. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good report, and I hope we get a good portion of what we're asking for. Simple question, or maybe it's a request, and I don't see it identified here, so I thought I would raise it. Would it be useful to send this copy of this to our MPP and any other relevant parties?
Sure. I don't think it would hurt.
I just think that would be useful.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. Councillor Paderak?
We originally applied for 2.9, and if I read this correctly, by June 22nd, we're only eligible for what we've actually spent. So how much have we spent? Is that the figure on
Ms. Tollett?
Can
you tell them?
Through you, Madam Mayor. So the initial cost of the $557,000 is probably the most accurate number. We've spent some money since then. I don't have the total figures for you, but I can get that number back to council after. Once the actual final guidelines come out, then we'll know exactly what our claim's going to be, and when we submit the claim in the end of August, then we'll report back to council after that with the total.
But it has to be spent by...
It has to be spent, the work has to be done and spent by the June 22nd in order to be eligible.
So at the last council meeting, I brought up the reality that we still have lots of what I call widowmakers over the road. And if they're not cleared by June 22nd, then we're not eligible to get any money for those. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are we able to contract with private contractors, pay them now, and they will do it through the summer and get paid for it?
So the work has to be done, and the invoice has to reflect that the work has done before June 22nd in order to be eligible.
Have we talked to any contractors to see if they can work for us for the next 3 weeks?
Mr. Loveridge?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. At this point, no, Councillor. We haven't got to that position. We've been so far doing that most of that work ourselves using our town staff. It's an interesting sort of juxtaposition in the sense of We would have probably, if we'd used contractors earlier in the process, we might have been able to claim more, but we have no idea whether we'll actually get that those funds or not. So at this point, we've been trying to deal with those individual widow makers by using town staff. It's sort of six of one, half a dozen other, whether we go out with a contractor at this point or not.
Thank you.
Okay. I have one question. I know coming back along Boston Mills Road yesterday between Credit View and McLaughlin, there's piles of stuff sitting on our road allowance, and so we're going to get that out of there? Good. Great. Okay. Thank you. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Move on to RB12, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Foley, that report CS 2014-063 regarding community-based strategic plan update be received. Okay. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB16, moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Whitehead, that report PREC 2014-011 regarding the 2014 Caledon Day Progress report be received, and that an exemption for the Town of Caledon noise bylaw number 86-110 be granted to the Town of Caledon on Saturday, June 14th, 2014, from 1 p.m. until midnight for the purposes of Caledon Day, and that the $50 noise bylaw exemption fee be waived, and that the $160 building permit fee be waived for the purpose of the Kids Zone tent installed by the town. And Councillor Whitehead's not here, so Councillor Thompson, do you want to second that? Thank you. Okay. All those in favor? It's carried. RB17, moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor Thompson, that report PREC 2014-012 regarding naming of park facilities be received, and that the following five parks be named as recommended by Heritage Caledon. Tarbox Park, Greer Park, Snell Park, Topham Park, and R.W. Moffat Park. That $7,200 be included as a one-time unavoidable budget increase in the 2015 operating budget for the four park signs. Okay. Councillor Patterack.
Yeah, there's a small glitch in the recommendation. The first one should read Elizabeth Tarbox.
Well, I just thought maybe they dropped the Elizabeth from the actual
name.
They
added the Elizabeth, actually.
Sorry, through you, Madam Mayor. We actually added it. We amended the report, but I guess we sent back probably the same original report, so we apologize. Okay. It is Elizabeth Tarbox.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. Councillor Thompson?
When we do the signage, are we going to do a bit of a history on what, or is there going to be a plaque put on why the parks were named this way? Because it is good information, and I got to say, it's great that Heritage have done the research that they have for the parks, and I'm glad this has been done. It's the same as we're trying to get roads named the same way. But I'm just saying, is there going to be anywhere that we'll have a bit of a history on why it was named?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I'll have to, I will send an email out later on today to Council indicating that. Mr. Barrett is at another meeting. So, but my understanding is that our park signage is very standard in nature. And when we name our parks, essentially, it just is a park sign. But I will double check with him.
Or even put it on the website or something so that people understand. Thanks. Okay.
Councillor DeBoer?
Yeah, I would just give support to Alan's suggestion in that you could make, even in the wintertime, when things are slow, if time does get slow in the shop, to make a sign that goes on the back. Because, yeah, the signs are standardized for the park. But I think it's history, and as we get more and more new people coming into the community, it helps them realize that there is a history here. I went through it with Sally on the Heritage Cemeteries, which the signs just showed up. And she said through the work plan, they're actually going to do that as far as they're concerned. So, you know, I think it is a good idea, especially as people move into a community like the Snell. Why would you name it Snell Park? I think that that ties back to the history of the community.
Yeah, I agree. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB18. Moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor McClure, That report, PW 2014-027, regarding Melville White Church sign installation be received, and that a new 2014 capital project be established in the amount of $12,074 for the Melville White Church heritage sign, funded from A, community fundraising and donations coordinated by the Bellefontaine Heritage Society and the Caledon Heritage Foundation in the amount of $6,528. And B, a budget transfer in the amount of $5,546 from approved capital project 13-019, heritage signage, and that the Bellefontaine Heritage Society and the Caledon Heritage Foundation be authorized to coordinate the collection of donations for this project on behalf of the town of Caledon, and that the treasurer be authorized to issue charitable tax receipts for donations to this town of Caledon project, subject to the Income Tax Act rules and regulations and conditions outlined in report PW 2014-027, and that any unspent funds followed the payment of the final invoice related to the Melville White Church Heritage Sign project be allocated back to capital project 13-019, heritage signage project, fund other heritage sign projects, and that council waive the town's sign permit and variance fees applicable to this application, and that staff pursue a request to the Region Appeal to waive the encroachment application registration and annual fee, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to enter into an encroachment agreement for the sign location with the Regional Municipality Appeal. Any questions? All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB 19, moved by Councillor Mezzapelli, seconded by Councillor Foley. That report, PW 2014-029, regarding the Assumption of Municipal Services, Laurel Park, Inc., Plan of Subdivision 43M-1176, Ward 5, be received, and that a bylaw be enacted assuming the municipal services on Plan of Subdivision 43M-1176, as shown on Schedule 1 of Staff Report, PW 2014-029. Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just real quick, I know there's a few of these in the next following reports. This one specifically, I note that there was no security mentioned. Is that just because there was no balance? All the others speak of a security that would be released. There's no security on this particular plan of subdivision?
Excuse me. Through Mayor Morrison, Councillor, I assume it's either been released prior to this or that there was no security on this particular subdivision.
Okay. And last question, again, generic to all the related reports. Is it the delay between when this was built and, you know, the warranty period expiring and today just simply a result of the developer coming back and asking for the town to assume responsibility and release securities?
Through you, Mayor Morrison, Councillor Mezzapelli. Part of an internal process at this point to go back and review and to sort of clear the decks on anything that's outstanding that we have not assumed. There was a number of them that was done previous to this, and there's still probably a few that are going to come forward in the future, but we're just trying to make sure that we've assumed everything that we're supposed to assume so that we can do what we need to do.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB 20. Moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli. That report, PW 2014-030, regarding the Assumption of Municipal Services, Laurel Park, Inc., Plan of Subdivision 43M-1365, Ward 5, be received, and that a bylaw be enacted assuming the municipal services on Plan of Subdivision 43M-1365, as shown on Schedule 1 of Staff Report PW 2014-030, and that staff in the Public Works Department be authorized to release the remaining development security held by the town in connection with Laurel Park, Inc., Plan 43M-1365. Mr. Kaufman? Oh, you put something on. Okay. He put his book down, put his button on. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB 21. Moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli. That report, PW 2014-031, regarding the Assumption of Municipal Services, Bayview Heights Homes Limited, plan of subdivision 43M-1331, Ward 5, be received, and that a bylaw be enacted assuming the municipal services on plan of subdivision 43M-1331 as shown on Schedule 1 of staff report PW 2014-031, and that staff in the Public Works Department be authorized to release the remaining development security held by the town in connection with Bayview Heights Homes Limited plan of subdivision 43M-1331. All those in favor? Carried. Move on to RB 22, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli, that report PW 2014-033 regarding the assumption of municipal services 1329871 Ontario Inc., plan of subdivision 43M-1408, Ward 5 be received, and that a bylaw be enacted assuming the municipal services on plan of subdivision 43M-1408 as shown on Schedule 1 of staff report PW 2014-033. And that staff in the Public Works Department be authorized to release the remaining development security held by the town in connection with 1329871 Ontario Inc. plan of subdivision 43M-1408. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB 23, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Thompson, that report PW 2014-034 regarding transfer of Coleraine Drive to the Region Appeal be received, and that an agreement between the Town of Caledon and the Regional Municipality Appeal on the interim and long-term debt repayments related to the Coleraine Drive debenture, as outlined in report PW 2014-034, be authorized, and that the Treasurer be authorized to execute the agreement with the Regional Municipality Appeal on the Coleraine Drive debt repayments, as outlined in report PW 2014-034. And subject to the satisfaction of the town solicitor, and that the 2015 base operating budget for public works and engineering be reduced by $126,224 in road maintenance savings related to the upload of Coleraine Drive, and that upon enactment of the subject bylaws, staff be authorized to take all required steps to effect the transfer effective June 27th, 2014, and that traffic bylaw 2011-020 be amended to remove all references to Coleraine Drive, and that Coleraine Drive Access Control Bylaw 2008-112 be repealed, and that a copy of this resolution and necessary amending bylaws be forwarded to the Caledon Ontario Provincial Police and the Region Appeal. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Very quickly, I see as a part of this many references to Coleraine are asked to be removed. The one I didn't notice, and I just want to make sure it is captured, is this, I guess, is currently part of our tangible capital assets. Will it also be removed when the region uploads it?
Through Mayor Morrison, that is a very good point. And yes, it will be removed from our books as a tangible capital asset and added to the regional books.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
I'd seen in the regional portion of the report they talk about the speed limits and stuff, but they only go as far as the Harvest Moon King Road, essentially where we've stopped paving. Are the speed limits going to be similarly applied, I guess, as the piece that goes farther north? Do we know? Because I would think that the 60 should actually go to the roundabout for the most part, and then the higher speed limit maybe as it goes farther north. But is that the way it would be applied?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. I'm not sure, Councillor DeBoer. We haven't had any detailed discussions, at least at this point, but I can check and get back to you.
Okay. And the other question, King Road isn't mentioned in it. I think operationally we manage King Road, but is the intent that somewhere down the line that the region's going to download that dot?
You know, Mr. Lover? No, but we'll find out. Okay.
Because I think one of the things we were thinking as a council is that once it became a town road, then we would have the opportunity to do more of the planning in and around that road.
Okay.
King.
You're talking about King that goes, Highway 50, because I'm thinking King is an east-west. Okay. I know I've had conversations with Chair Kolb about that. And he said, leave it for now until all of this gets settled. and then they'll probably look at that. Okay? Actually, the bridge needs some work on it. Yes. And we're looking at sidewalks on it. And let me tell you, the town of Caledon couldn't afford it. So, yes, that's exactly. So we'll just let that one lie for now. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Okay. Okay, well, we'll move on to receipt of minutes or correspondence. Okay. Moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli, that the correspondence items as listed in the correspondence package for the June 3rd, 2014 council meeting be received. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. Public question period. Are there ever there any members of the public who would like to ask a question? No? I didn't do council inquiries. I guess I was trying to get through the whole agenda. So I'll do that now. Councillor Beffert?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Very, very briefly, all members of council received a letter, I believe, from Alton Mills, Inc. regarding an amending agreement with regard to the Thomas Farm in Alton. And I would just like to say I've spoken with Patricia this morning. We're waiting for the amending agreement from Mr. Humanek's lawyer. And when that comes in, it will be dealt with as quickly and expeditiously as possible. I would like, however, people to know that initially Mr. Humanek took over this property with a fully approved subdivision agreement. And since that time, it's been quite a few years. There have been several things that have kind of happened. We waited for servicing. There have been some new laws that have to be put into place, for example, stormwater management. And also, Mr. Humanek has negotiated with us some things of value to the town. So it's been a little dicey, but I think because he has helped us along, and I know Patricia's willing to do this, we expedite it as quickly as possible. Part of it is that Mr. Humanek doesn't quite send the things that he says he's going to send, and Patricia gets a little frustrated. But as long as people know that it's being looked after, and the letter is just simply another reason to say get going. So thanks, Patricia. I appreciate that.
Councillor DeBoer? Councillor Foley? Councillor McClure? No. Councillor Patterack?
Yeah, I have two. I wonder if Parks and Rec could supply a council with a memo update on what the go-forward plan is for the Caledon pool, the existing Caledon pool. Has the water been removed after the crane arrives on site and takes away the HVAC? Are we going to begin the deconstruction during the school holidays and get that site cleaned up before school? So I'd like a memo on that. And the other question I have is to planning. I was reading the New York Times on the weekend, and they had an article about older adults housing. And, you know, we hear about all these wonderful communities they have there. And they have the ability to have restricted older adult housing. That is, you can't be in there with children. You have to be a certain age. And we don't have that. The only people who are allowed to run developments of that kind are the public. So Peel Living has restricted buildings for seniors. And it seems to me that we've been trying to get older adult lifestyle housing built, and one of the obstacles will always be cost and development charges. And it also seems to me that if we were able to get the provincial government on side, if it can legally be done in Canada, we could have lower development charges for these, because there would be no school tax attracted to development charges for schools, because there will be no students. There will be a smaller headcount in these, so the average load that they would have would be lower, and there might be other economies to be found within the development charges to get the number down and make it more affordable and more attractive for developers. Because where we talk about this, and we've been talking about this at this table for a long time, so my question is to Planning Department, what are the obstacles for us to getting the province to agree that this would be a good thing, and possibly we should be raising it with our other municipal partners, that we should be pushing for some options so that we can get more of this housing stock built.
Councillor Mazzapelli? Councillor Thompson? Okay, thank you. Okay, public question period. Any members of the public? I didn't see anyone coming forward. Bylaws, moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor McClure, that the following bylaws be read a first, second, and third time and finally passed. 2014-044, 045, 046, 047, 048, 049, 050, 051, 052. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, I need adjournment. Councillor DeBoer, Councillor Mazzapelli, all those in favor of adjournment? Carried. Thank you very much, folks. I knew we